Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. This is Book 11, Chapter 20. Meanwhile, Moscow was empty. There were still people in it. Perhaps a 50th part of its former inhabitants had remained. But it was empty. It was empty in the sense that a dying queenless hive is empty. In a queenless hive, no life is left, though to a superficial glance it seems as much alive as other hives. The bees circle around a queenless hive in the hot beams of the midday sun as gaily as around the living hives. From a distance it smells of honey, like the others, and bees fly in and out in the same way. But one has only to observe that the hive to realize that there is no longer any life in it. The bees do not fly in the same way. The smell and the sound that meet the beekeeper are not the same. To the beekeeper's tap on the wall of the sick hive, instead of the former instant unanimous humming of tens of thousands of bees with their abdomens threateningly compressed and producing by the rapid vibration of their wings an aerial living sound, the only reply is a disconnected buzzing from different parts of the deserted hive. From the alighting board, instead of the former spirituous, fragrant smell of honey and venom, and the warm whiffs of crowded life, comes an odour of emptiness and decay mingling with the smell of honey. There are no longer sentinels there sounding the alarm with their abdomens raised, and ready to die in defence of the hive. There is no longer the measured quiet sound of throbbing activity, like the sound of boiling water, but diverse discordant sounds of disorder. In and out of the hive, long black robber bees, smeared with honey, fly timidly and shiftily. They do not sting, but crawl away from danger. Formerly, only bees laden with honey flew into the hive, and they flew out empty. Now they fly out laden. The beekeeper opens the lower part of the hive and peers in. Instead of black, glossy bees, tamed by toil, clinging to one another's legs and drawing out the wax with a ceaseless hum of labour, that used to hang in long clusters down to the floor of the hive, drowsy, shrivelled bees crawl about separately in various directions on the floor and walls of the hive. Instead of a neatly glued floor swept by the bees with the fanning of the wings, there is a floor littered with bits of wax, excrement, dying bees, scarcely moving their legs, and dead ones that have not been cleared away. And the beekeeper opens the upper part of the hive and examines the super. Instead of serried rows of bees sealing up every gap in the combs and keeping the brood warm, he sees the skillful complex structures of the combs, but no longer in their former state of purity. All is neglected and foul. Black robber bees are swiftly and stealthily prowling about the combs, and the short home bees, shriveled and listless, as if they were old, creep slowly about without trying to hinder the robbers, having lost all desire and all sense of life. Drones, bumblebees, wasps and butterflies knock awkwardly against the walls of the hive in their flight. Here and there among the cells contained dead brood and honey and angry buzzing can be sometimes heard. Here and there a couple of bees, by force of habit and custom, cleaning out the brood cells with efforts beyond their strength, laboriously drag away a dead bee, or bumblebee, without knowing why they do it. In another corner, two old bees are languidly fighting or cleaning themselves, or feeding one another, without themselves knowing whether they do it with friendly or hostile intent. In a third place, a crowd of bees crushing one another attack some victim and fight and smother it, and the victim, enfeebled or killed, drops from above slowly and lightly as a feather among the heap of corpses. The keeper opens the two center partitions to examine the brood cells. In place of the former close dark circles formed by thousands of bees sitting back to back and guarding the high mystery of generation, he sees hundreds of dull, listless and sleepy shells of bees. They have almost all died, unawares, sitting in the sanctuary they had guarded, and which is now no more. They reek of decay and death. Only a few of them still move, rise and feebly fly to settle on the enemy's hand, lacking the spirit to die, stinging him. The rest are dead and fall as lightly as fish scales. The beekeeper closes the hive, chalks a mark on it, and when he has time, tears out its contents and burns it clean. The footnote says the Russian hives were usually made of hollowed-out tree trunks, which were cleansed by charring. So in the same way, Moscow was empty when Napoleon, wary, uneasy, and morose, paced up and down in front of the Kamakolesky rampart, awaiting what to his mind was a necessary, if but formal, observance of the proprieties, a deputation. In various corners of Moscow there still remained a few people aimlessly moving about, following their old habits and hardly aware of what they were doing. When, with due circumspection, Napoleon was informed that Moscow was empty, he looked angrily at his informant, turned away, and silently continued to walk to and fro. "My carriage," he said. He took his seat beside the aide-de-camp, on duty, and drove into the suburb. "Moscow deserted," he said to himself. "What an incredible event." He did not drive into the town, but put up at an inn in the Dorogomilov suburb. The coup de theatre had not come off. Alright, there we go, another chapter down. And what a frankly ridiculous chapter that was. Tolstoy stretched that metaphor so far that I think he forgot that he was making a metaphor and just started describing a beehive for probably about a page, to the point where the things that he was describing you could no longer relate back to the abandoned city. You know, at the start it was a cool metaphor. At first glance the beehive still looks like a beehive. There's bees flying around, there's some vague noise, you can hear it, it still smells a bit like honey, and then on closer inspection you see that it's actually been abandoned and these are just the last few lingering souls. That's as far as he needed to go. He then went on and on about beekeeping. I think he just wanted to show off his beekeeping knowledge, is what that seemed like. He must have had some interest in beekeeping, maybe he was one, or he just at some point was reading about it, found it fascinating. Thought it was a good metaphor, but then, he got lost in that metaphor. He stretched it way too far, to the point where the things he was saying were no longer in any way related to what was happening in the book. That was awful. I did like it. That's a chapter, but if you shorten that metaphor down to the point where it wasn't stretched or even completely broken, as it was in the end, that whole chapter would have been about half a page. So I think he had to flesh it out a little bit there. Napoleon rocked up at Moscow. At first it didn't seem abandoned, just a bit quiet. And then he realized that it was. End of chapter. Sonic Vroom said, "I liked this chapter. The fact that an entire chapter is dedicated to this metaphor conveys the gravity of the situation, where Moscow, which I would venture to call the heart of Russia, is deserted." Yeah, I would argue that the whole chapter, it wasn't a metaphor. You know, it isn't dedicated to the metaphor. The metaphor broke after about one sentence, and then it was just literally describing a beehive, which you couldn't relate back. So I'll go into it. Let's have a little look. Midway through, it says, "Having lost all desire and sense of life, drones, bumblebees, wasps, and butterflies knock awkwardly against the walls of the hive in their flight." Okay, so if the bees are the Moscow people, they're abandoning it, what are the drones, bumblebees, wasps, and butterflies that are knocking awkwardly against Moscow in their flight? People from other cities, maybe? Or the French themselves? Here and there among the cells containing dead brood and honey, an angry buzzing can be sometimes heard. So the cells containing, it makes it sound like there's a lot of dead people around, like tons and tons of dead people, because all these cells in the hive have either dead or dying bees. So if this metaphor is to be held true, then Moscow must have somehow be full of dead people. And an angry buzzing can sometimes be heard. So the sound of Moscow is typically a working kind of buzzing noise, and here it is an angry buzzing noise. Is that the case? Were people yelling angrily in the street, or fighting, or screaming, or I just don't think that that's what it actually represents, what was happening in the city. I think he just started describing beehives. Stratton loves that I enjoyed the beehive metaphor. More poetic than saying it straight, and you really feel that Moscow truly deserted, and those left behind are left to die there. Okay, well, that's a good point. If you're left behind there, you are left to die there. Maybe there was some truth in the dead people all around the town. Obi-Wan Spicoli said, I liked it as well. I suspect that we'll see a correlation between the bees' behaviour and the behaviour of the people left in Moscow in the coming chapters. I'm sure this is a direct metaphor for the looting, occupation, and ultimate burning of Moscow. Yeah, the burning too, I suppose. Is there a lot of looting? I suppose there probably would be that too. And the bumblebees, moths, and butterflies are obviously different races. I don't know. I didn't like it. Everyone seems to have loved this chapter. The metaphor went on. It should have stopped 10% of the way into that metaphor. It might have been able to hold without being too much of a stretch. Then it became a bit stretchy. I don't like when metaphors stretch to the point where you can just kind of poke holes in them, and they make, you know, when this is my rule with metaphors in writing as a writer. If the metaphor itself is more complex to explain than the situation that you're trying to use it to explain, it's much easier and clearer for the reader to just explain the situation. You don't actually need a metaphor. It's just making it more confusing. And then if you do go in for a metaphor and start to stretch it in all these different ways, like he has, explaining more and more, you're meant to be able to relate, you know, if the beehive is the city, that makes sense at that point. But then he's explaining all these different aspects of the hive, and it just is, you no longer relate it back to which bit of the city are we talking about now. I think it's actually pretty silly. And then if it gets to the point where the metaphor breaks, I would just say take it out of the book, because you're making something that's pretty easy to explain just confusing, really. It seems I stand alone on this point. Everyone seems to have loved this chapter, so... hey, what do I know? Anyway, that's going to do us for today. Thank you very much for listening, and I will see you tomorrow.